Next case is 12-1958 and 12-2042, State of Ohio versus Jason Romage. For the appellant, Ms. Tobias.
Good morning, Chief Justice O'Connor. May it please the court, Melanie Tobias on behalf of the State of Ohio. The issue facing the court today in this case is the constitutionality of Ohio Revised Code 2905.05, subsection A, criminal child enticement. This code section makes it unlawful for any person to knowingly, without privilege, solicit, coax, entice, or lure a child under the age of 14 to accompany that person in any manner. I'd like to point out that I think it's important to note that to violate this statute, to be sure, you can do it through speech means alone, but also can be violated through conduct and conduct combined with speech. That is important because in an overbreadth analysis, when you have conduct involved with speech, in order for a person challenging a statute as being overbroad, they then have the burden of showing that the overbreadth and the scenarios that could be swept under the statute are real and substantial, not just isolated instances that could possibly be covered under the statute, but a real and substantial amount of activity that could be swept under the statute. The four appellate court districts in Ohio that have found the statute to be unconstitutionally overbroad were all bothered with the use of the word solicit in the statute. They define the word solicit to encompass merely asking or offering a mere invitation. And according to the four appellate court districts, this then would, a mere invitation violating the statute, would sweep within its purview a substantial amount of protected First Amendment activity. The state of Ohio posits to this court at this point that this can be remedied by applying a narrowing definition of the word solicit and or ultimately severing the word solicit from the statute.
Can we talk for a second about these facts and whether the conduct of this defendant, using your definition of narrowing the interpretation of solicit, did he solicit the children? Did he solicit, was it because he offered them money to carry boxes? I mean, can you apply, in taking your interpretation, apply that to these specific facts?
Sure. And Your Honor, I will note at the outset that there was never an as-applied challenge made in this case. The challenge in the trial court in this case was to the face of the statute. So there was not a full record made in this case. The complaint alleges that the defendant offered money to two neighborhood boys to help him move boxes into his apartment. But there was never an opportunity to flesh that out to determine whether there was more to that activity, what the specific, you know, actions were of the defendant in making this offer of money to the children to move the boxes. So basically, all we had was just what was initially in the language of the complaint, because we never got past the defendant's initial motion to dismiss the case based on the overbreadth challenge.
So looking at those facts, would you say, though, that he did violate the statute according to your narrow interpretation? Because he would, was that a solicitation, even under the narrow interpretation that you offer?
Yes, potentially it could be, but he still could have had an as-applied challenge. To the statute. So the overbreadth analysis, it's strong medicine. As the U.S. Supreme Court and this court has held repeatedly, it should be used as a last resort. It's strong medicine. Again, it doesn't preclude individuals from lodging as applied challenges to the statute, to the specific facts of their case. But yes, potentially there could be an argument that even under a narrowing version or severing the word solicit, the fact that he was offering the children money to move the boxes into his apartment would still violate the statute.
Well, counsel, following up on Justice French, with this fact situation and given your argument that even as you would have us repair the statute, this would be a violation, isn't that just Exhibit A as to why it is overly broad and can't be fixed?
Well, no, because
it seems like this could be a totally harmless and normal activity of somebody who had bunch of stuff to be carried into their apartment, looking at a couple of kids and say, hey, give you a couple of bucks if you help me get this stuff.
Right, and the defendant
into my apartment.
Correct, Your Honor. And the defendant in that case could, again, he could argue that the statute, as applied to his specific case, could not be constitutionally applied to him. That doesn't require this court to strike down the entire statute and the subsection of the statute as a whole. That would be an individual decision to be made on a case-by-case basis. Plus, you could still have an argument in that scenario that, look, the government, the state of Ohio, has a compelling interest and protecting children, and protecting children from being moved from locations, taken into secluded areas, moved out of public view, when their parents don't know about it, and the parents have not given permission to the individual to move that child. There's a compelling interest to do that, and so any infringement, incidental infringement, or small infringement on someone's speech rights is justified by that compelling interest.
So I think if someone at a high school football game offers a 14 or 13-year-old go get a pizza after the football game and doesn't check with their parents before doing so, is that a violation of this statute?
Well, it would depend on the circumstances.
Well, the circumstances would be one individual is under the age of 14 and another one says, do you want to go get a pizza after the football game?
Right.
Is that a violation of this statute in your view or not?
Potentially no. If the statute requires that the person not have the implied or explicit permission of the parents.
Well, we have one high school student and another high school student.
Right. And if they're friends with each other and they've been over to each other's houses in the past, the parents are familiar with them.
They haven't.
Okay. Well, then you could also make the argument that just merely saying, hey, let's go get pizza, that does not rise to the level of coaxing, enticing, or luring.
That's not a solicitation or coaxing?
Well, if you narrow the definition of soliciting to require more than just merely asking, or if it's severed from the statute and you're just left with enticing, coaxing, or luring, those three verbs imply inducement, coercion, the use of potential artifice. It's not just a mere invitation of, hey, let's go get some pizza to eat.
That's coercion?
It could potentially be. You have three verbs that you could use, entice, coax, or lure. And those have definitions that vary to tempt with the hope of reward, to manipulate with persistent effort, to induce or entice for something immoral or wrong, to strongly attract. So to argue
many
that simply
of, many
say,
of the statutes that have a preclusion of what an individual's conduct can be also have an element that you may not solicit for purposes of committing a felony or for purposes of engaging in criminal activity or something of that realm. And this language in this statute doesn't seem to have any criminal purpose. Isn't that what the defect is in this, the way this is drafted?
Correct, Your Honor. The statute does not require proof of a criminal motive on or an unlawful motive on behalf of the person making the enticement or luring of the child. And that's because
that's what's troubling to the court, because we have an individual who wants to move some boxes into an apartment or out of an apartment or whatever it is, and we have difficulty distinguishing between those that might be engaging in some criminal mischief and those who are going about their business in a normal civil fashion, just trying to offer some money to children who might be able to assist.
The government's interest in protecting children, if you require in the statute that the state prove an unlawful motive, makes it very hard for the state to then carry out the intent of the statute, which is to protect children. Because by the time, in many scenarios, that you would be able to prove that the person's motive was unlawful, it's because they then haven't committed a crime against the child. It basically makes you wait until the individual then has taken the child into their apartment and exploited them, sexually assaulted them, kidnapped them, done something. So the state's goal is to prevent this from the outset, to nip it in the bud from the very beginning.
Has there been an amendment to this statute?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Has there been an amendment?
There has been an amendment to the statute. It took effect in July. The General Assembly added a subsection C to the statute that would require proof of an unlawful purpose. But I will note that they did not strike out subsection A. Subsection A is still in the statute.
Okay, so does the amended statute have that criminal purpose involved in it?
Subsection C does. A is the same, B is proof of sexual motivation, and subsection C now has unlawful purpose.
So the statute said that there were two subsections that had to apply. And is the amendment also something that must apply, or is it independent?
It's independent. The state, depending on how this court rules, the state could still go forward under subsection A, which would not require the state to show an unlawful purpose on part of the defendant.
Okay.
Counsel, in the practical application, you're suggesting you need this left on the books because this is an effective tool to fight folks who would lure children. So I'm not quite understanding how that would work.
I'm sorry, I guess I
don't. You're saying, well, if you don't have this, we're forced to wait until they're taken.
Correct. Correct. I mean, you read in the
paper.
So
are you suggesting that there's officers walking with kids coming home from school to intercept someone who says, Johnny, how about I give you $5 to rake the leaves of my lawn without checking with mom and dad?
Well,
I mean, I don't get how
Your
the
Honor,
enforcement
I
comes or how the deterrence comes. Who would even know about this?
Well, I think most reasonable people would know that you don't approach a child that's a stranger to you and ask them if they want to ride in your vehicle.
Where does it say stranger?
No, the statute does not say stranger, but the statute would apply to scenarios, okay? It would validly apply to scenarios where you don't know the child and you're asking them for a ride. You don't know the child and you're asking them to come into your apartment with
but
you.
But that's
to
the
go
problem.
To.
The statute doesn't say that. Justice Pfeiffer is talking about the kid next door, and by this statute, as written in A, if you ask, entice the child next door to rake the leaves, you have a per se violation, and I guess confession is good for the soul. I moved from South Russell to Chagrin Falls last weekend. The going rate is $10. I had kids unload a truck. Did I break the law? I didn't ask their parents. They're kids that are known to me and to my kids. Did I break the law?
Well, potentially, you could have been in violation of the statute and then could have an
Why
argument.
Potentially? This is a per se violation, is it not?
It's not a per se violation. The state still has to prove that what the activity you engaged in was enticement. What you did with the children was to entice
them. I did entice
them.
I gave them $10.
Well, I think you could make an argument that that doesn't qualify as enticement. But then you could also further
they
make...
They wouldn't have done it if I hadn't given them the $10.
Okay. Then you can make an argument that the statute as applied to you would potentially be unconstitutional.
Isn't that what's before us this morning?
Right, but the court needs to find that those scenarios, the level of those scenarios, are real and substantial as compared to the legitimate sweep of this statute, which would cover people who are asking children, small children, luring them with puppies, candy, trying to get them into vehicles, take them into secluded areas, not just offering $10 to move a box out of the truck. So the potential valid application of the statute as compared to scenarios as the one Your Honor has pointed out.
By the way, I just noticed, I just read the statute again. I'm an emergency room nurse, so I guess I'm off the hook.
There you go. Yes,
under
there
two,
are.
Under
yes,
two.
If you are a
you
safety.
Cannot prosecute me for having kids.
Your Honor,
boxes into my house.
Counsel,
I'd like to.
Counsel, the problem here is that the Mr. Ramage didn't challenge this as applied to him.
Correct.
And the lower court didn't. They uniformly or across the board declared this to be overbroad.
Yes,
and
Your
so
Honor.
If he would have said, hey, this was a perfectly innocent request, and I think he was offering them quarters, not dollars.
So, correct.
He had that opportunity, and had they dismissed it based on as applied to the facts of the case, we all wouldn't be here.
Correct, Your Honor.
So this is the problem from your point of view is that to strike this statute as overbroad, and there's no way really for us to fix it by eliminating solicit, or any of the other words that are describing the activity, because under many, many circumstances, those exact words of solicit, coax, entice, or lure are appropriate in the objective of this statute.
Correct, Your Honor. But I think that the court could still find that the state has a compelling interest in protecting children in this fashion. And if the statute is narrowly tailored to meet that interest, then there can be incidental infringements
on speech.
How are
we going to narrowly tailor this? What would you have us write that narrowly tailors this statute? What would we strike something? What would we do?
You would narrow the definition of the word solicit so that it comports with entice, lure, or coax. So when it's used in a list of words, it can be given a more precise meaning by looking at the words surrounding it, so that to solicit would mean more than just merely asking or a plain invitation. So again, the scenarios of, let's ride our bikes to the park, come over here and, fold, I think one of the examples in my opponent's brief was come over here and do election flyers and fold them up in an envelope for me. None of those would fall under the statute because they're just mere invitations. And again, solicit was the word that bothered the appellate courts because it meant to merely ask. And if the court's not willing to narrow it,
We have to attach something akin to solicit for criminal purposes or solicit for...
No, you could just narrow it to mean that it has to be more than a mere invitation. It has to mean more than merely asking, because enticing, coaxing, and luring, those words mean more than just merely asking or offering an invitation.
Well, let me give you an example of coaxing. If we're going to use Justice O'Neill's scenario, he asked, a group of young boys, would you come on and help me, lift these very heavy boxes? And they said, we don't think so. Well, how about if I make it worth your while? How about if I give you, $10 an hour or whatever? Is that not coaxing someone?
Well, I think an offer of money in return for doing an activity, you could argue that that isn't coaxing. That's not cajoling or manipulating through persistent effort, and that's the definition of coaxing, manipulating through persistent effort and cajoling, that a simple invitation or offer to do that may not rise to the level of coaxing. But again, you could also argue
But counsel, isn't it the lack of unlawful purpose that we're really talking about here? I think the amicus brief for the public defender talks about the Florida statute and talks about a bill that was introduced this year that would make our statute similar to Florida's by saying requiring an unlawful purpose in the attempt to solicit, coax, entice and lure. So, that's the issue here. It's all of these scenarios arise because we're talking about innocent purpose to do these things. And if that were the fix, that's not for us to do. We don't rewrite statutes. That's for the General Assembly. So if we find the defect to be so prominent here that it violates the Constitution, it's going to be for the General Assembly to rewrite the statute, is it not?
That is correct, Your Honor, and as we discussed earlier, they have. They have already passed a version of the statute that adds a section requiring an unlawful purpose.
Does it change A?
It doesn't change. A is still in there. The state could...
A is the problem. A is what we're looking at.
Correct, Your Honor, and what I'm arguing is that the state of Ohio's compelling interest in protecting children is met by having a statute that doesn't require proof of unlawful purpose, because in order to prove that element, the state, in most scenarios, it's too late. You have to wait until it's too late to show what the person's purpose is. If they're attempting to commit a crime against your child, it almost makes, unless they're going to just volunteer when you catch them asking the kid.
That's the point, isn't it? Because there are scenarios where there is no unlawful purpose with certain behavior. And we're talking about what is criminalized, what are people told they cannot do under the law. And that's the problem with the overbreadth that we have here.
But I think that because of that compelling interest of the state, that it is permissible for the state to then criminalize even what may be seemingly innocent communications with children. That it would be legitimate for the state to legislate and criminalize that to meet the compelling interest.
I have trouble with your argument in a practical sense that if we don't require, as Justice Lanzinger said, the problem with the fix was it wasn't a fix because it didn't require, with respect to A, a showing of criminal purpose. And your argument is, oh, but then that makes us wait until something bad has happened. It would seem to me the real application in the real world would be when the kid comes home and says, Mommy, this creepy guy down the street was offering me quarters to take boxes up into his house or his apartment or that kind of thing. And then Mommy calls the police and they check and discover this creepy guy's got a bad record. And then you build your case.
Right, but in that scenario, Your Honor, potentially when you talk to the individual, he's not going to confess, oh, yes, I was offering quarters because I wanted to sexually molest your child when I got them into my house to move boxes. And just because he has a bad record doesn't mean the state's going to be able to do anything then. And what the state wants to do is just prohibit this behavior from the beginning, from the start, and send the message that you're not to engage in this type of communication with children without privilege to do so, whether you're a public safety worker or you've got implied or expressed permission of the parents, and that the consequent infringement on some speech that you may engage in is justified by the state's compelling interest in stopping individuals from soliciting, coaxing, enticing, and luring children to accompany them when they don't have the parents' permission to do so. They don't have privilege to do so.
Thank you.
All right, thank you, Your Honors.
May it please the court, my name is Bridget Riddell, and I'm here today on behalf of appellee Jason Ramaj. As you've said, Justice Pfeiffer, the facts of this case are Exhibit A as to why this statute is overbroad. Justice O'Donnell's example of the pizza at the high school football game and Justice O'Neill would all be guilty of child enticement simply because they asked a question. They will be guilty of a law that was designed to prohibit child kidnapping and abductions simply for asking an innocent question. And because this statute, although it's well-intentioned, lacks any element of a criminal mens rea, it's an unconstitutional restriction on First Amendment free speech. And as I said, under this statute, the question is the crime. The statute criminalizes asking certain questions of a child, regardless of the questioner's motives, simply because the parents might disapprove. The statute imposes a content-based restriction on First Amendment speech, and I'd note that it doesn't criminalize the underlying act of accompaniment, so the act of moving boxes or the act of carrying groceries is not criminalized, but the predicate element is the solicitation. In other words, the question is the crime. And so, for example, here, as soon as Mr. Ramaj said the words, will you help me move boxes, the crime was committed. No matter what happened at an evidentiary hearing subsequently, even if we went to an evidentiary hearing and showed that Mr. Ramaj was a saint, he had completely benevolent motives, he would still be guilty under this statute because the only requirement is the request for the solicitation without getting prior permission.
So, counsel, if the statute, if A were amended to say the same thing it says now, but says with unlawful purpose, would you have the same argument?
Yes. If the addition of the unlawful purpose, if that was added, then it would not encompass so many innocent protected scenarios because the exception that the state talks about for offers to engage in illegal activities would apply for the exception of First Amendment speech, whereas here, because the statute's so broad, it encompasses offers to engage in legal and illegal activities. So yes, in response to your question, that would fix the problem. So,
but doesn't the state also have an interest in simply prohibiting people from moving children, from offering them, not just asking? If we were to take out the word solicit, or if we were to interpret it to say it doesn't mean merely to ask, it means to entice a child to go with you. As an adult, does the state not have a compelling interest?
Well, absolutely, the state has a compelling interest.
So, if it has a compelling interest, is your complaint then really about whether it's narrowly tailored to meet that compelling interest?
That's right. Yes, that's correct. So, if as Justice Lanzinger said, if there was an addition of some kind of criminal mens rea, then that would be the narrow tailoring that's required to eliminate the infringement on protected conduct.
Doesn't the state also have an interest in prohibiting people from moving children without their parents' consent, even if they don't have a criminal motive? Is there an interest there in simply protecting children.
Right, and there are laws against kidnapping and child abduction, and that moving children without their parents' consent would be covered under those. But here, we're
if you complete the act. Mm-hmm. I mean, here what we're talking about is trying to get the child to come with you. I mean, obviously the purpose was to cover the guy in the van who stops the girls on their way home from school.
Right.
Will you get in the van with me because I have cookies or I have candy or I have a puppy or my puppy is lost? I mean, how else do you narrowly tailor that interest to protect it?
Could you file an attempted kidnapping charge?
Right. You absolutely could file an attempted kidnapping charge, yes. Or alternatively, as I said before, you could amend this statute to include some kind of intent to commit an illegal act, which would cover the scenarios that you discussed.
So your point is you can't just sever the word solicit and have it be a fix. That would not fix it.
That's right, because the terms entice, lure, and coax still involve, or still encompass and criminalize a substantial amount of innocent scenarios, like here, where Justice O'Neill offered money to help pack his truck. He would have enticed the children in that case. So
let me ask you a question along those lines then. If you seem to be conceding that the state of Ohio does have a compelling interest in protecting children.
That's, yes.
We'll all go with that, right?
Yes.
Doesn't that change the constitutional analysis, therefore, to the rational basis versus strict scrutiny?
No.
Isn't there a rational basis for this statute?
Well, because we're dealing with First Amendment speech issues here, and because this is a content-based restriction on speech, the strict scrutiny is required. And despite the fact that there is, an interest in the state in protecting children, there is no recognized exception to First Amendment speech in order to protect children or because parents might disapprove of what is said. There are very narrow exceptions to free speech for obscenity and fighting words and offers to engage in illegal activities, and none of those are here. So as I've said, the statute imposes a content-based restriction on First Amendment speech. So RC 2905.05A criminalizes a substantial amount of constitutionally protected speech and is not narrowly drawn to serve the government's interest in protecting children. The briefs in the lower court decisions abound with examples and hypotheticals demonstrating how this statute applies to innocent everyday interactions. And the state asserts that the words in the statute should be defined narrowly so as to lessen the infringement on protected speech. But if the words of the statute are given their plain meaning, then the statute is overbroad, criminalizing an innumerable amount of innocent protected interactions that do not further the state's interest in protecting children. For example, the state discussed the word solicit and whether or not if we strike the term solicit or if we narrow its construction, will that solve the problem? And in fact, it will not. Even if solicit is given a more narrow meaning or is stricken from the statute, as we've said before, entice, lure, and coax still criminalize a substantial amount of speech. And additionally, the verb to accompany is discussed in the briefs as well. And accompany means to go with or to attend as an associate or companion. And the state suggests that the definition should be to go with. And further, the state suggests that accompany should apply only where there's an appreciable change in the child's location or setting. But this really creates more problems. For example, having an appreciable change is not the commonly understood definition of the term. In addition, it is vague, it's difficult to apply, and it leaves open for arbitrary and discriminatory enforcement. And reasonable minds could differ as to what an appreciable change means.
Counsel, if I may ask you one housekeeping matter here.
Yes.
Your opposing counsel has suggested that you did not challenge the statute. You challenged it only as applied to this case.
We challenged the statute on its face in this case, and we filed a motion to dismiss early on in the case before there was an opportunity to have an evidentiary hearing. So we didn't have the opportunity to introduce the facts of the case at a hearing. So we didn't get to the point yet of being able to make an as-applied challenge. But at this point, we're challenging on its face. And as I said before, even if we had an evidentiary hearing, there's really nothing that we could demonstrate at the hearing that could vindicate Mr. Omaj in this case, because a completely innocent question to help move boxes is covered under the statute.
Counsel, when you make a facially unconstitutional challenge, or you challenge the statute as it's written, is your standard that it can never be applied constitutionally, or because we're talking about overbreadth, is it a different standard?
That's right. The standard is that the conduct infringes on a substantial amount of protected speech in an overbreadth facial challenge.
So even though there may be some circumstances where the scenario fits within the parameters for which it was intended, we're talking about overbreadth here, and that's a totally different analysis.
That's correct. The question is whether, compared to the legitimate sweep of the statute, does the statute encompass a substantial amount of innocent conduct? So really comparing the two. So, of course, there are cases, in response to your question, where there would be people out to harm children, and those would be covered under the exception of exception to free speech for offers to engage in illegal activity. But here, as in the many countless scenarios that the court has put forth, that exception just doesn't apply in the majority of cases.
Did you say there could be some who are out to harm children?
Yes, yes, there
are. How would we distinguish those from others?
Well, our criminal statutes, many criminal statutes require an intent to commit some crime. So, for example, theft requires...
In this statute, how would we do it?
How would we? Well, we would, for example, the Massachusetts statute or the Florida statute require an intent to commit an unlawful act or an intent to commit one of enumerated statutes, you know,
but we can't do that. That's something for the legislature to do with this statute.
That's right.
There's no way that this court, your argument is there's no way for this court to rehabilitate this Section A.
That's correct, yes. There's no way for the court to rebuild. Yes, we have to send it back to the General Assembly and see if they can try again. And one of the questions before was with regard to the revised statute, which went into effect in July. So the revised statute added a subsection C, which said that you can't solicit a child for an unlawful purpose, but A was left untouched. So really, that change demonstrates even further that if A encompasses is a general prohibition, Section B encompasses solicitation for a sexual motive, and C is solicitation for an unlawful purpose, then if each of those are independent crimes, then the only thing really left in A is solicitation for a lawful purpose, which would be almost entirely protected conduct and speech.
Because Section C here, it says no person for any unlawful purpose other than or in addition to that prescribed by Division A of this section shall engage in any activity described in Division A of this section. So it's preserving the universal application or prohibition against the activity of A and adding in addition to, which is, I'm not sure that really makes too much sense,
right.
Saying you can't, it's almost saying you can't do it for innocent purposes and you can't do it for unlawful purposes.
That's right. That's
so
exactly right.
It confuses things even further because it really reinforces that you can't ask a child to move a box for a quarter.
That's correct. That's correct. The only way to interpret A to be constitutional here would be to say that it means the exact same thing as C. And then finally, the last term that's discussed in the briefs is the idea of implied permission. And again, as the briefs discuss, this is a vague, fact-specific term and could result in arbitrary and discriminatory enforcement. And the example provided in the reply brief of the youth sports coach is a good one. The state argues that allowing a child to participate in sports carries with it necessarily the implied permission to ride in the car with the coach. But that isn't necessarily going to be true for every parent, and that's going to differ from parent to parent. So, for example, if the coach says to two different children, I'll give you guys a ride home to get your baseball gloves. And an officer overhears him and arrests him for child enticement because he solicited them to accompany him in some manner. So then the case would go to a evidentiary hearing on implied permission, and it could be very well that one parent gave implied permission and one didn't give implied permission. So it's going to result in an arbitrary result in that for saying the exact same word to two different kids, he's going to be convicted of child enticement in one case and found innocent in the other case. And then finally, as we've discussed, there are less restrictive means available to achieve the state's goal of protecting children. So in sum, the statute imposes a content-based restriction on protected First Amendment speech. It criminalizes countless innocent interactions that do not serve the state's purpose of protecting children. And because the statute is not narrowly tailored, we'd urge the court to affirm the 10th District decision.
Thank you. Ms. Tobias, you've used all your time. You may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would just argue that we keep referencing innocent behavior, that this criminalizes innocent behavior. But if the state's compelling interest is compelling enough, its compelling interest to protect children, then it is permissible to then criminalize what we would deem innocent behavior. To meet the state's goal of protecting children, to keep them from being moved from locations where the parents don't know where they are, the parents have not given their permission, and to prevent children from being exploited or having crimes committed against them, the state, if the statute's narrowly tailored to do that, can criminalize otherwise what we would deem innocent conduct.
So you would have us define in an opinion what solicit means and have a very, very narrow definition?
Correct, or sever it from the statute if that word is what is problematic, which is what was problematic for the lower courts.
Okay, if we are to define it, narrow it in an opinion, how does that give the public notice?
The public has notice when they read the statute that enticing, coaxing, luring children, or soliciting with a narrow definition, meaning cajoling,
participating. Well, nobody's going to, you know, then you're saying if I'm a citizen, I've got to read 2905.05, and then I've got to go see whether there's ever been an interpretation of any of these words via a Ohio Supreme Court decision.
Well, Your Honor, we deem the public to have knowledge of all of our criminal laws without necessarily requiring that they've gone into the code books and read them and read the case law history. The fact that the law has been passed, and if the terms in the law are not vague, then the public is deemed to have knowledge of those laws. And again, I think that...
Well, here the term... I mean, isn't that the argument, that these words are overbroad and vague?
No, there was never an argument about vagueness, which is a completely separate line of inquiry, and that was not the argument. It was just that it was overbroad, and again, the lower courts were specifically concerned with the use of the word solicit, because it could mean to merely ask or a mere invitation, and all of the scenarios that the lower courts point out that were problematic stemmed from the use of the word solicit.
So your suggestion to us be to strike solicit or to narrowly define it?
I believe the court could narrowly define it, given that it's used in a list of other words that have a more precise meaning. If the court believes that the plain meaning of the word solicit doesn't allow for that construction, then the court can, under constitutional parameters, can strike it from the statute. It meets the Geiger test. It doesn't change the meaning of the statute. You don't have to add additional words into the statute once you sever it. You simply sever it and leave entice, coax, and lure in the statute. And while there may still be impermissible applications of the statute that can be attacked on an as-applied basis, you don't have the overbreadth at that point. You don't have the real and substantial amount of additional activity that the lower courts were concerned with. So that the remedy then wouldn't be to strike down the entire subsection.
Well, what would be your new definition of solicit?
It would be to tempt. If you look at the dictionary definition of solicit, it does include to offer or to ask, but it also includes to tempt. And the definition of to tempt connotes to lead someone into a wrongful or immoral action, and it falls in line with the definitions of luring, coaxing, and enticing.
So...
a mere invitation would not be sufficient.
That would still work for the more common use in the criminal genre of the word solicit, right?
Correct.
Lady down on the corner is tempting.
Correct.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Marshall, will you call a recess?